Cousin Ford, Faith Nation, Saturday, 6676.
Mr. President, in the course of the campaign, you said some fairly strong things about some of Ronald Reagan's policies. You've also said he's much farther to the right than the majority of Americans. If he were to be elected president, would it be a dangerous or uncomfortable presidency for the United States?
First, I don't assume that he's going to be nominated, and if he's not nominated, he won't be elected. Therefore, I really haven't anticipated that we would have 4 years of a Reagan administration. I do have some differences with him as to the course of foreign policy, how to handle it. I do have some differences with him in certain specifics in domestic policy, but those are things that I think a man would learn from experience if he held this office, and therefore he might change when he's dealing with reality and not dealing on the political campaign.
From CBS News, Washington. A spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview on Face the Nation with Gerald R. Ford, President of the United States. President Ford will be questioned by CBS News correspondent Bob Schieffer, by UPI White House Bureau Chief Helen Thomas, and by CBS News correspondent George Herman. Face the Nation is produced by CBS News, which is solely responsible for the selection of today's guest and panel.
IBM is pleased to sponsor these Face the Nation broadcasts, which give you, the viewer, an opportunity to hear and evaluate varied opinions on the issues of the day. Anything that can get a fireman fighting a fire sooner can mean the difference between lives saved and lost, a house saved or burned. What that can come down to in many cases are some very simple pieces of information. Fire departments in several cities are now using IBM computers like the System 370 to provide firefighters with these simple but vital pieces of emergency information. Information which is constantly updated by street address. No matter where the fire is taking place, dispatchers working with the computer can radio what kind of building's on fire, what it's made of, where the nearest working fire hydrant is, if there's enough water pressure, whether or not invalids live in the building, all minutes before the firemen even get to the fire. IBM computers can give fire departments, they can also give hospitals, police departments, and other emergency services to help make our cities better places to live in. IBM, helping people find the answers.
President Ford, you say you are not making the assumption that Ronald Reagan will get the nomination or be elected. But the problem lies ahead of you now for Tuesday in California. Some political experts think that you're going to have a really tough time at the convention if you don't win a good hunk of California's vote, say 45%. Can you do it?
We're very encouraged by the last 3 days. I talked to some people in California, and I have gotten reports from our people in California. And we think we're coming from an underdog position with new momentum, and we believe we're closing the gap, and we think that there's an opportunity to win California. That, of course, would be the ultimate, but we'll think we'll do quite well in California.
Mr. President, how many delegates do you think you'll have when you go to Kansas City, and do you still think you'll win on the first ballot?
Ms. Thomas, I think we'll win on the first ballot. At the present time, we have 805 delegates. We expect to win a good share of the delegates on Tuesday. That'll put us quite close to the necessary 1,130, and if we do well on Tuesday, then I think we only need about 40% of the uncommitted delegates. So the opportunities look, I think, very good for us in Kansas City on the first ballot.
Well, Mr. President, do you feel that you'll have the delegates before the convention actually opens, or do you feel, as Vice President Rockefeller does, that you probably will be 20 or 30 votes short, but you'll have them by the time the first ballot comes around?
We believe that we'll have them by the time the first ballot comes around. There are always those, you know, Mr. Schieffer, who play a little cozy and haven't quite made up their mind, but if we add up the committed and those that we think are honestly leaning our way, I think by the first ballot, we'll have the 1,130.
But you won't necessarily have them by the time the convention opens.
Well, I'm not going to argue about whether we have them by the time the convention opens or not. The most important time is when they actually cast their vote in that first ballot.
Mr. President, let me get back just for a moment to Ronald Reagan. One of the most interesting things, I think, that has been found by the CBS New York Times polls is a statistic that came up the other day that said if the race were Ford versus Carter, 41% of those who call themselves Ronald Reagan people would defect and vote for Jimmy Carter. It also says that 23% of those who call themselves Ford voters would defect to Carter if Reagan is the nominee. In light of that, aren't you going to have to put Ronald Reagan on the ticket if you're going to have the backing of your party? And you've got to have the solid backing of the Republican Party.
I have said that I would not exclude any Republican that I've looked at or we've heard about that might qualify as being a vice presidential candidate, and that would include Ronald Reagan. Now, he has himself indicated he would not be interested in being vice president, but as far as I'm concerned, I would not exclude him. Now, we'll have to take a look at the two people that the Democratic Party nominates in their July convention in New York City. We'll have to see how the convention turns out in Kansas City, how we can best heal any wounds that the party might have as a result of the many primaries. Of course, the main thing is the person who is going to be nominated for vice president fully qualified to be president? And case something should happen to the president.
But are you
now
really
all
curious?
Of those things have to be put into this formula, and we'll look at the kind of data that you've indicated, but I think it's premature to make any commitment at this time.
But are you seriously saying that the choice of the Democratic convention would really influence the man that you want for your vice president?
It certainly is a factor in the formula.
That's major been
the that's been the tradition in conventions over the years in our presidential races. You can't ignore it. Democrats have done it, Republicans have done it, and I suspect it will be a factor, not the controlling factor, but it'll be a factor.
I know this is probably something you can't tell us in some detail. You usually give a list of people that you're interested in. It's been well published. Do you have one favorite yourself in your bosom, as they say in the church, who you would like as your vice president?
I haven't decided on one person, Mr. Herman. I have several that I think fit a very good category of the kind of people, but it's very premature to make any final decision at this point.
But Mr. President, you have said several times on several occasions that Reagan's statements on Panama, Rhodesia, and so forth are irresponsible. And yet you say all that would be forgotten when he gets into the White House, he would be responsible. Are you saying that Reagan is only making campaign rhetoric now and doesn't truly believe in the things he says? You have also implied there would be guerrilla warfare if Reagan became president and stopped the Panama Canal negotiations.
Sometimes in the heat of a political campaign, statements are made that on cool reflection, candidates wish they hadn't said.
Are you referring to yours or his?
I'm referring to several that have been made by my opponent in recent weeks. And certainly, if a person becomes president, he has to be more judicious, more careful in what he says and how he says it and when he says it. And I think when you get in that Oval Office, Ms. Thomas, it does make you far more responsible than you are when you're out on the political hustings.
In a recent interview, you volunteered, or in answer to a question, I guess, some information about your plans for alternatives to court-ordered school busing. Could you explain them in somewhat more detail than they were explained as I read them? They seemed a little indefinite to me, or are they still in that stage?
Well, I think there are three points we have to make before we discuss busing. Number one, this administration will uphold all constitutional rights of any individual in this country, including the rights under the 14th Amendment. Number two, this administration is totally dedicated to quality education. And number three, this administration will carry out the decisions of the Supreme Court. I took an oath of office to do so, and I will continue to do so. Now, we have found, or I believe, that court-ordered forced busing to achieve racial balance is not the best way to necessarily protect individual rights on the one hand or to achieve quality education on the other. Therefore, starting back in November of 1975, I asked the Attorney General and other members of my cabinet to see if we couldn't put together something that would be better than the remedy that has been used by some district courts in trying to solve the very difficult problem of protecting constitutional rights and at the same time achieving quality education. Within the last 2 weeks, the Attorney General has decided not to intervene in the Boston case for good reasons that he, as Attorney General, decided, and I support him. On the other hand, the Attorney General is seeking a particular case where we can get a clarification or a modification of some of the previous Supreme Court decisions in this very complex area. Now, in the interim, the Department of Justice has prepared, or is in the process of preparing, legislation which I will submit to the Congress in the very near future, which would seek to limit the courts of this country to the correction of the areas where the local school board, by its act, has violated the constitutional rights of individuals, in this case students, and not to permit the court to go beyond the instances where rights have been violated. Now, in some cases, the court has taken an illegal act of a school board, relatively small part of a total school system, and taken over the whole school system. And the court, in effect, has become the school board. I think that's wrong. And the Attorney General agrees with me. And the legislation that we will propose will seek to limit, to minimize the corrective action or the remedy by the court to the actual instances where there is a violation of a person's constitutional right. That will minimize, in many cases, to a substantial degree, the amount of court-ordered force busing.
Mr. President, but the courts have already ruled on that point, and if I understand it, in 1973 in the Denver case.
Are you talking about the Keyes case?
Yes, sir.
The Keyes case.
Where they said that was not a remedy, that you couldn't just remedy it in a specific area rather than the whole system.
The Attorney General and his associates informed me that that has not been totally clarified, and that is the purpose of actually seeking a case where the Department of Justice can go into a subsequent case and get a clarification. And that is why we are going to propose legislation so that there is a legislative direction given to the court to make sure that we protect constitutional rights where there's been a violation, and at the same time preclude the courts from becoming, in effect, the school board in a local community.
Let me ask you a somewhat broader question, and you're the attorney and I'm not, so maybe you can explain it to me. If the courts have already ruled that busing is a permissible way to achieve integrated schools, and they have already ruled that integrated schools are a constitutional right.
It's a permissible remedy to
correct an
injustice.
How can you pass a law to limit that remedy if the courts have already ruled it's constitutional? Don't you need a constitutional amendment to overturn that?
The Constitution permits the legislative body to give guidelines in certain court cases, and according to the Attorney General, he believes that this proposed legislation is constitutional. It will simply limit the remedy to the instance where there has been a violation of a constitutional right. According to him, that is constitutional.
And it's your interpretation that the Keyes case did not invalidate
what I understand proposed. It was a dictum, not a final judgment.
Well, to get to cut through some of the legal niceties, which are a little hard on us, it seems to me that, perhaps I misunderstand it, the final impact of this is to leave in place all de facto school segregation, which has happened without the breaking of a law.
The court's already decided that.
So that this is the direction which you wish to encourage law and legislation to continue.
We would recommend, as the court has said, we correct the violations. But we only correct the violations, not make a federal district court a local school board.
Mr. President, what chance do you think such legislation would have of passing, and what constitutional right is violated by being bussed?
Well, the Congress, I think, would be responsive to some legislation of this kind, because I think the public...
This year?
I would hope so. I can't promise it, because I don't control the Congress, but I do believe there is a great public sentiment for a limitation or a minimization of the courts in the remedies that they have pursued. And what was the second?
The second is, what constitutional right is being violated by being bussed as a student?
Well, bussing is simply a remedy to achieve a correction of an alleged act by a school board to violate somebody else's constitutional right. Bussing itself isn't a constitutional right, nor is it a lack of a constitutional right. It's only a remedy.
But isn't it the law of the land to desegregate the schools in this land?
Where there has been a specific violation of a person's constitutional right, it is not beyond that, and that's the real point at issue.
On another subject, Mr. President, you're working...
Before you change subject, before you abandon schools altogether, further, just to explore one further item. Private schools, the private white academies that have been founded in parts of the South, you would leave those as being perfectly legal?
That court, case is now before the Supreme Court.
What's your own feeling?
I think that the individual ought to have a right to send his daughter or his son to a private school if he's willing to pay whatever the cost might be.
But a segregated private school, if that should be his choice?
I think in a private school, a person ought to have an individual right.
But what if those schools get some kind of federal aid, Mr.
Schieffer? Well, if they get federal aid, Mr. Schieffer, that's a totally different question, and I certainly would not, under those circumstances, go along with segregated schools.
That would include any kind of tax break, federal tax
that's
break.
Right.
But would you approve of a private school turning someone away on the basis of color?
Individuals have rights. I would hope they wouldn't, but individuals have a right where they're willing to make the choice themselves and there are no taxpayer funds involved. Now, this is a matter before the courts at the present time, and I think there will be a Supreme Court decision probably in this term or in the next term, certainly. But individuals have a right where there's no federal funds available. I would hope they would not. And our own children have always gone to public schools, which were integrated, and they've gone to private schools where they were integrated. So my own record is one of our children and my own belief in integration. But I think individuals do have some rights where they are willing to make the choice and pay the price.
Are you working for a Middle East conference this year? You said you were talking actively to the Israelis and other governments to move off dead center, the status quo. Is there a possibility that there could be a Geneva conference this year?
It's not likely that there would be a Geneva conference this year. I don't rule it out entirely, but it's not likely. We are, however, I'm talking to heads of government when I see them, as I did with Prime Minister Rabin of Israel when he was here. We are talking with foreign secretaries. We think momentum has to keep going beyond the Sinai 2 agreement. If we stop the momentum, the pot begins to boil again. So we're trying to deal bilaterally, urging other nations to get together to move forward. But the prospect of a Geneva conference in 1976, I think, is somewhat remote.
And does the Syrian intervention in Lebanon have your blessing?
We have objected to any foreign intervention in Lebanon. We don't believe that military intervention is the right way to solve Lebanon's political problems. About 8 weeks ago, I sent Ambassador Dean Brown as my special emissary to Lebanon, and he was very helpful in trying to bring some of the parties together, and I think we made a significant contribution in seeking a political settlement without any military intervention. I repeat, the United States government is opposed to any military intervention in Lebanon. I think it could be destabilizing, even though thus far it has been done with restraint.
Are you doing anything about it?
We have let all parties know that we oppose any military intervention.
Mr. President, almost every campaign speech, it seems to me, you say something about the economy, which goes along the lines of everything that should be going up is going up and everything that should be coming down is coming down.
And that's true, and it's getting better every week.
Then that gives point to my question, which is that the CBS News, New York Times polls of voters has repeatedly shown a very strange phenomenon. Only about a third of the people that we have queried in various states around the country expect their economic state to be better a year from now. The rest think it's going to be the same, and a very large proportion, in some places more than half the people, think they're going to be worse off in a year. What's going on?
Well, if you look at other surveys, you find that consumer confidence has been going up and up every month or whenever.
Until
they...
recently.
There was a slight drop in recent... I think the last week or so, but right. For the last 9 months, it's been going up very steadily, and over the last year, it's gone up 100%. Now, I think there was a little apprehension that developed because we had a wholesale price index figure that went up 0.8% for the month of April. But now that we had the good news of Friday, where the wholesale price index had went up 0.3, then I also saw, as you did, that we had good unemployment news, and we added some 300,000 more to our employment figures. So I believe public confidence after that just 30-day setback will again start climbing. And if it continues, as all of us think it will, we'll have a continuous process of economic growth and stability.
Mr. President, could I get just for a teeny minute get back to politics? I must say I am struck by how nice you're being to Ronald Reagan today. At the beginning of the broadcast, you talked about how you thought he would grow in office if somehow he wound up there at the White House. You talked about how you have obviously taken note of some of the statistics I cited about how many Reagan voters would go over to Carter. Would it be fair to say that you're not just including him and you're not excluding him as a vice presidential possibility, but you're giving serious consideration to Ronald Reagan as your running mate?
I'm giving serious consideration to him like I am to all of the other Republican potentials. I think we have to have an open mind about all of, say, 10 to 15 individuals, including him.
Mr. President, one of the last times we had you on this broadcast, when you were Congressman Gerry Ford, we asked you about the Warren Report on the assassination of President Kennedy. A great deal more information has come out about motive in the case of the assassination of President Kennedy, information which was not obviously available to you as a member of the Warren Commission at the time. Do you agree with those who say that therefore the Warren Commission report should be reopened, the thing should be restudied?
I think in the very limited area, a reopening might be desirable. The Warren Commission did make a massive effort to try to find a motive. And we had academicians, we had lawyers, we had all kinds of people trying to find out.
Everything but the information from the
CIA. And we never were able to find a motive. Now, if there is some additional I think, constructive information available, I think it ought to be reopened in that very limited area.
You say if. Do you not think that there is additional?
I haven't had an opportunity to examine the detailed information, and until I have personally examined it, I don't think I ought to pass judgment on it.
Mr. President, you said repeatedly that yours is an open administration. Anybody can come in and talk to you. Has anybody come in and talked to you about getting rid of Secretary Kissinger as a means of improving your chances?
Absolutely not.
Nobody in your administration?
Nobody in this administration has come to me asking that I fire Secretary Kissinger. I happen to think he's done a first-class job. We're at peace, and that's the responsibility of the Secretary to carry out my foreign policy. It's been successful, so I want him to stay.
Thank you very much, President Ford, for being our guest on Face the Nation today.
For many, many years, our language has been spoken here, Navajo. It is a very beautiful language, very subtle. We have at least 10 ways to say honor. We have as many ways to say respect. But until very recently, our language has only been spoken. Our ancient stories, our ceremonies have passed from generation to generation by word of mouth. Our grandparents still teach us skills the same way their parents taught them. But a culture to continue to survive must be more than written in the minds of people. It must be written on paper. It must have its own writers, its own literature. That is why we have worked so hard for this. It is an IBM typing element in Navajo. If it's any IBM Selectric typewriter, we've worked a long time with IBM designers and engineers to develop it. A little ball with 88 characters on it. So simple, but now our children are reading and writing about their land, their country, in Navajo.
IBM, helping people find the answers.
Today on Face the Nation, Gerald R. Ford, President of the United States, was interviewed by CBS News correspondent Bob Schieffer, by UPI White House Bureau Chief Helen Thomas, and by CBS News correspondent George Herman. Face the Nation has been sponsored by IBM. Next week, another prominent figure in the news will face the nation. This broadcast was produced by CBS News. Roadblocks set by his friends impede Kojak's investigation of murder. Telly Savalas stars tonight at 9, 8 Central Time, right here. Face the Nation was taped yesterday and originated from Washington, D.C.